This is Mac for Math This Week. 30 minutes of news, reviews, Q&A, and features from the world of the Macintosh, iPod, and iPhone. Coming up on this edition, everything you need to know about Mobile Me.
Apple really needs to learn to under-promise and over-deliver rather than the opposite way around. But it is a very, very strong service. You get a lot of stuff.
Chris Finn tells the good, the bad, and the ugly of Apple's revamped online service. Also, 32 great iPhone apps you can't live without.
It's very, very simple to go in and buy stuff. You can browse and search the store. You can find apps. They're listed in top, most popular. You can go in by genre, all that sort of stuff.
With the Apple Store finally open, we've got our favorite picks for the iPhone and iPod Touch. All that and more on this edition of Mac for Math This Week. With the resources of Mac for Math magazine, this is Mac for Math This Week. Hello everyone, I'm Brad Gibson. A few months back, Apple upgraded the iPhone to its new 3G model, and with it totally redesigned its online service, which you previously knew as .Mac. .Mac allowed users to share their address book and email across the internet with other Macs, and even access this information remotely via a web browser. Among its various other features included the ability to store files online via the iDisk service and create online galleries of video, audio, and photos. But Apple had an idea. Revamp .Mac with the ability to do most of what .Mac offered, but include the ability to sync, or what is now being called push, email, calendar, and contacts instantly among multiple Macs, PCs, and the iPod Touch and the iPhone. The new service is called Mobile Me, and for £59 a year, Apple has called it the simplest way to keep everything in sync. But since its debut in early July, Mobile Me has had more than its share of problems. There were a lot of glitches, especially with the web-based address book, calendar, and email programs, and Apple chalked it up to technical problems. But for its users, it was a rocky road, which Apple acknowledged, and Steve Jobs admitted that Mobile Me should have never been launched until the bugs were worked out. New York Times writer and longtime Mac author David Pogue, who is known by many as a staunch advocate of the Mac and Apple, even went so far as to call the new service a mobile mess. So a month and a half later, should you consider subscribing to Mobile Me? Mac for Math deputy editor Chris Finn has just finished an in-depth review of the service, warts and all, and he joins us to explain Mobile Me and whether you should subscribe. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Hi there, Brett.
Let's get into an explanation of Mobile Me. What is it and what's the promise?
It does promise a lot, doesn't it? I mean, it's a subscription service, so you pay a fee every year. In this case, it's £59, which is actually £10 less than .Mac was. Mm-hmm. And for that, you get an awful lot. And in fact, when I was writing the review, it was so easy to completely forget about huge chunks of the service. There's so much there. Things like Back to My Mac that I'd completely forgotten about. But let's start at the beginning. So, as you see, at the heart of Mobile Me is this bunch of space you have online, the iDisk. And the iDisk can be split between, it's 20 gigabytes of space, and it can be split between mail and storage just for files that you can chuck up online. You've also got, as you say, synchronization of your PIM data, your calendars, your contacts, and your email between multiple Macs, and now, crucially, multiple Macs, including PCs and iPhones. Now, the idea is that everything syncs over the air. So if you had an iPhone or iPod Touch before, you're used to the idea of plugging it into your Mac to be able to update your address book or your calendar. Now, that happens over the air, i.e. wirelessly, automatically, without you having to do anything at all. Changes are just pushed towards your iPhone or your iPod Touch. The big thing as well that I glossed over there is the fact that this now works with Windows, so that if you're a Windows user, you can get this service. If you are using Internet Explorer, let's say, on Windows, then you can synchronize your bookmarks from, let's say, Safari on the Mac to IE on Windows. So it really is a big, big service. And then there's the Back to My Mac stuff that I talked about, the ability to not only to access files stored on remote Mac, so if you're working in the office, you can connect your Mac at home and copy files off there and vice versa, but also to control Macs over the internet. So you can share the screen of your Mac at home from work, manipulate stuff on screen exactly as if you were sat in front of it. Finally, you've got the galleries, so stuff for iPhoto and iMovie projects you can put up on there. We've lost a couple of very small things. iCards are no longer there. They've been ditched as part of the .Mac service, but I don't imagine many people will really miss those.
Well, I actually use the cards, but that's not a really big loss. But the big thing you're talking about here, that the difference is between .Mac and MobileMe, is the ability to push and get live instantaneous changes among my different Apple products, iPod Touch, iPhone, Mac, whatever, in terms of my data.
That's right. That's the promise.
Yeah, exactly.
The promise is that it's instantaneous, so that as soon as you update an address book on your iPhone, boom, it appears in address book on your Mac. In practice, though, Apple's had to sort of back away from this language, because when they talked about MobileMe initially, they talked about it as being Exchange for the rest of us. Exchange being Microsoft's big calendaring and contacts and email server system that businesses use. And they've had to sort of move away from this language of push, because although changes are pushed instantly between web applications and the iPhone, desktop applications on the Mac, or as I say now on Windows with Outlook, let's say, synchronize only roughly every, let's say, quarter of an hour. So the changes aren't absolutely instantaneous. Now, is that important? I can't really decide, because for me, the fact that you can do it is much more important than how quickly it happens. And Apple is working hard, it says, to improve and to speed this up. And it has taken that language about push away from its documentation, its marketing stuff for MobileMe.
Yeah, and as you said, MobileMe has had some really serious problems. I mean, as you wrote in your review on page 92, it's not the panacea Apple made it out to be. It's been really a fiasco. It's been a mess in the beginning. They probably should not have come out with this product as a final product, as I wrote in my column in Mac Format. It should have been a beta to begin with. Give people an idea of what the technology can do without it being the final wherewithal of everything.
I think part of the problem here is we've grown so used to Apple pushing out products that are, in general terms, flawless. You know, we're used to a very, very high standard from Apple when it comes to this sort of stuff. And let's face it, MobileMe is a very different service for Apple to be pushing. It's never really done internet services in quite such a big way before. And they had a very steep learning curve. And in fact, as you know, there was a memo sent round from the Apple CEO, Steve Jobs, to the Apple employees, which has since been leaked, where he acknowledges the fact that it was a mess. And he says that rather than launching MobileMe as a monolithic service, they should have launched over-the-air syncing with the iPhone to begin with, followed by the web apps one by one, first mail and then calendar and then contacts. They should have been much, much more graduated. And let's remember as well that on the day that this was launched, Apple also launched the App Store, the new iPhone firmware, and the iPhone 3G. They just had too much on their plate, and hopefully it does seem like they're learning from that.
Okay, now Chris, let's get into the web apps, which are the big part of MobileMe. I think the part that is really the nucleus or the meat of MobileMe for users who are going to be using a lot of applications on their Mac or on their laptop, like iCal, your address book, your email. Tell us how these web apps work and how we can sync them and really use them to their full advantage.
Well, the really nice thing is that you've now got a really easy to remember web address. You just go to me.com, and that can be either /mail or /calendar or whatever, and you can get into online versions of your data. So all your data is synchronized up from your Mac or your PC or your iPhone into what the buzzword is, into the cloud, basically just onto servers. And I don't particularly like the phrase, but you will find me using it because it's a very useful phrase. So stuff gets synced up into the cloud, and you can then access that either from your iPhone, from your desktop apps, or as you say, from these new web applications. So you go to me.com from pretty much any browser, and you can log in, and there is all your mail, all your folders are there, all your sent messages are there, your contacts are also there, searchable and sortable. And new with MobileMe, this wasn't possible before, you can also view your calendars online as well. And they are very good apps. There were problems, a lot of problems in the first week or so of its launch, people not being able to get access and things have been very unresponsive, but now they're absolutely fine. You can log in. They're very, very slick. Lots and lots and lots of functionality in there. One thing you can't do, incidentally, is you can't create an event and invite people to it in the same way as you can on iCal. And that's a bit of a glitch. I'd rather you were able to do that. But you can log in. All your information's there. And remember, any changes you make to either an address card or to a calendar event, they're all synchronized. All those changes are propagated down to your iPhone or to your desktop apps as well.
Okay, great. So the Mobile Me, does it live up to the hype?
It's a really, really difficult question to answer. To answer your question absolutely strictly, no, it doesn't. But that's just because it was hyped too much, mm-hmm. I think Apple really needs to learn to under-promise and over-deliver rather than the opposite way around, which is what they're doing. What they did with Mobile Me, they did say it was going to be fantastic. They did market it as a panacea, and it really isn't. But it is a very, very strong service. You get a lot of stuff built into that. The ability to control your Macs over the internet, the over-the-air synchronization is fantastic. It really is. And there's a lot of good stuff in there. The Windows side of it, I think, needs a bit more work, and maybe that shouldn't surprise us necessarily, because I think a lot of the problems I was having when I was testing Mobile Me were not problems with Mobile Me itself or mm-hmm. the way that Apple has implemented the service, mm-hmm. but it's problems with the way that, let's say, I was using Outlook 2007 on under Vista, and I think the way it handles stuff wasn't perhaps as elegant as Apple would have liked. But otherwise, yes, it's a very good service. But put it this way, the acid test for any piece of software, hardware, or service in this case, from a reviewer's point of view, is would I spend money on it? And yes, I would. I buy Mobile Me, I'll continue to subscribe to it, because the service it offers, the synchronization and the over-the-air syncing and the back to my Mac stuff, makes it valuable enough for me.
Yeah, I mean, at £59 a year, I mean, I am a .dot Mac subscriber, or now a Mobile Me subscriber. I loved it for the value that I got then. If we can get past, or if Apple can think about remarketing and revamping Mobile Me and try and get past the really bad start of this and get into how Mobile Me can really benefit the users that subscribe to it, like they did with .dot Mac, then they've got a winner. They've got to get back to what it does for the user, in my opinion.
I agree. I think that the problem with Mobile Me isn't that it's a bad service. It's actually a very, very good service. Mm-hmm. It's just that Apple, I think, slightly overstretched itself in trying to launch it at the same time as all these other major products. And they were slightly overblown in their marketing of it. But it remains a very, very solid service. And if you're a traveling businessman, if you are going on vacation, if you're just trying to keep in touch, if you have an iPhone, it's almost an essential add-on. The only thing you maybe hope that Apple would do is simply make it cheaper. We look at Google, for example, with its suite of services, which are essentially free. But then again, those are ad-supported, whereas these apps are clean and they're elegant. There's no adverts cluttering up. It's just your data.
Exactly. All right, Mobile Me, £59 a year. Chris reviewed it with 4 out of 5 stars and said, definitely an upgrade to .dot Mac, but it's not the panacea Apple made it out to be. The Windows side needs more work too. But 4 out of 5, really good with all the problems this has had. It really is worth looking into. All right, Chris, thanks so much for the review of Apple Mobile Me. We'll talk to you later.
Cheers.
Chris Finn is deputy editor of Mac Format Magazine. His review of Apple Mobile Me is on page 92 in the September issue. We've spoken a lot over the past months about Apple's ambitious plans to launch an online software store where users of the iPhone and iPod Touch can download applications. For about a month now, the service has been live, offering everything from games to online news readers to helpful little utilities. It's the early days for sure, but the App Store, which you can access via Apple's iTunes software, is growing daily. And if you own or are thinking of buying an iPhone or iPod Touch, it's definitely worth a look. You'll find a great 6-page feature in the September issue of Mac Format entitled The 32 Best iPhone Apps, and Chris Finn rejoins us now to review some of his favorites. Chris, let's get right into this. For the novice out there who's just dipping their toe into iPhone apps, how does this whole thing work, and how do you get these apps?
Well, Apple, as you'd expect, has made it as easy as it possibly can. You can either go in through iTunes on your desktop Mac or PC. You can browse and search the store. You can find apps that are listed in top most popular, you can go in by genre, all that sort of stuff. Or on your iPhone or iPod Touch itself, there's actually, as long as you've installed the iPhone 2.0 firmware, which is a free upgrade for iPhone users, or it's $5.99 for iPod Touch users, as long as you've installed that firmware upgrade, you'll get a little icon on your home screen called App Store. It's a little blue icon. You can tap on that and it will take you to the iPhone-friendly version of the same store that you get through the iTunes on your Mac. Find an app you like, tap on it to buy it, and you'll be charged to the card registered with your iTunes account. It's very, very simple, and all updates are pushed through the same system as well. So if there are upgrades, little incremental bug fixes and stuff, you'll be notified through iTunes or through the App Store thing on your iPhone. You can just download those updates, and away you go.
Okay, now, Chris, for people out there who have downloaded shareware apps online, and there's various ways of doing that through different sites and stuff, this is very different. I want to make sure people understand, not only is it different, but in my opinion, it's actually easier.
Apple's basically the only place you can get this stuff from. You can only get apps for the iPhone and the iPod Touch officially. Obviously, if you jailbreak your phone, it's called, if you hack it, you can do it in slightly different ways, but officially the only place you can get apps for your iPhone or iPod Touch is through the iTunes store, which is a bad thing in some ways because Apple sort of calls all the shots and Apple's in complete control of that, but it's that typical Apple thing of control equals ease as well. It's because Apple just does everything itself, it's very, very simple to go in and buy stuff. One thing you'll notice is that there's no mechanism really for offering demo applications. You can't try before you buy. But the way some developers have got around that is by offering two versions of their applications. So you'll quite often find a light version that just has, maybe if it's a game, a few levels, or is limited to a certain functionality. And you can then, if you like it, go and buy the full version. And I should point out as well that most of the apps on there are really cheap or they're free. So even the ones that are paid for, even though you can't really try before you buy, at worst you're going to lose a few pounds.
Right.
It's not dreadful.
Exactly. Okay, now it's probably best to break down these apps into those that are free and those that have a price tag. And the great thing here is that let's start with free, because as we know on this show, we love free.
Free is good.
Exactly. Now let's begin with the first free app, and that is NetNewsWire, which the name many people will find synonymous with the version that's on the Mac.
Absolutely. NetNewsWire is an RSS newsreader. RSS is a technology that you can have that sites can employ this isn't technically correct, but it's a very useful lie to sort of push news to your desktop. So rather than you going and checking 100 different sites each day, I've got my RSS reader, my NetNewsWire on my Mac set up so that it pulls feeds down from all the different sites, and I can keep up to date with Mac news, industry news, world news, technology news, all that sort of stuff. And it's also a way of keeping track of friends, so I have blogs, RSS feeds coming in, and I've got like statuses from various social networking sites coming in. I've got photo streams from my friends Flickr coming into RSS, all that sort of stuff. It's very useful. eBay searches, all that sort of stuff. NetNewsWire is the iPod version, and it, like the desktop version, it synchronizes with the NewsGator.com server in the cloud, as we've said in the iPhone review as well, the Mobile Me review. So it pulls down all your news from the NewsGator server. All of this, if all this sounds really complicated, it's really not. It's a really, really simple service to use. You can launch NetNewsWire, and basically you've got all your feeds there, ready to read on your iPhone as you're going about. So it's a really good way of keeping up to date with news as you're out and about.
Okay, now our second one is Facebook, which everyone knows what Facebook is. If you haven't been on a computer lately. But Facebook, the software is free, and it gives you the ability to do much of what you would do on a web browser in terms of accessing and getting information from Facebook about yourself and other people.
So as you say, Facebook, a very, very popular social networking site. I was very dubious about social networking. Only my colleagues here at Mac Format that convinced me that I really should get onto one of these things, otherwise I risk being left behind.
Exactly.
And as you say, the Facebook application allows you to do a lot of the stuff that you'd do on the Facebook site itself. The first version of it wasn't all that feature rich. There was a few things missing. One of the big things was you couldn't actually write on people's walls, which was a big omission, but that's been fixed, and the version that you have now is actually a really, really rich application. It's worth remembering though that you do actually have Facebook still runs its iPhone optimized website. So if you go to facebook.com on your iPhone, it will direct you to the iPhone optimized web version. But for my money, I prefer the application itself. It's free for one thing, and it's much, much faster. It's much more responsive. And you can keep track of people's statuses. You can write on their walls. You can chat, and all your inbox stuff's there as well. It's a really slick little application. And you can also use it to take photographs with the built-in camera in the iPhone and upload them directly to Facebook.
Okay, now our last free app is TapTap Revenge. Some people might look at this as sort of a game in a way, but it's really kind of interesting and a neat way to take advantage of the touchscreen on your iPod or your iPod Touch or your iPhone.
That's right. I mean, it is a game. It's a bit like a Guitar Hero or going back a bit further, Dance Dance Revolution. The basic idea is that there are three sort of strands vertically on the screen, and little bubbles come down those strands, and you tap on the screen where those bubbles hit the base of the screen. And this is all done sort of in time to music. It's actually really, really addictive, and it's really fun. It uses accelerometer as well in the single player mode, so that as some arrows will come down as well rather than bubbles, and you've got to nudge the phone left or right or back and forward. The other nice thing about it is it's been used almost as a way of promoting unsigned bands, because if you've got some music, if you're in a band or you create music on your own, you can actually submit it to the people, the developers, and they can bundle that then along with the app if they want to, and then distribute it that way. So it's quite a nice little garage band type thing as well.
Okay, now let's now move on to the paid for apps, and the first one costs £2.99. It's called File Magnet, and basically it turns your phone or your touch into a storage device.
Yeah, that's right. The way it works is you launch the application on your iPhone, you launch a little helper application on your Mac, and then because they're on the same wireless network, they discover each other automatically through Bonjour, and you can then just copy, you can drag files onto the iPhone. Now, you can drag any files at all onto the iPhone that you want. The really neat thing is that some file types can actually not only be stored on the iPhone, but viewed on the iPhone as well. But things like JPEG, GIF, TIFF, PNGs, HTML documents, rich text documents, Word documents, text documents, and PDFs can all be viewed straight on the iPhone, along with iPhone compatible movie files, audio files, and obviously Excel and PowerPoint stuff is on there as well. I'm still waiting. There's a really nice little app coming out from a developer called VioSoft called Datacase, and that's an application that will do everything that the File Magnet does and even more, because rather than having to have a helper application on the Mac to connect to, you can actually browse it over a standard browser like mm-hmm. Safari or Internet Explorer.
Oh, cool.
The nice thing about that, of course, is that let's say you're going to visit your mum and you have to install some drivers on her PC, or you want to install Firefox on her PC, what you can do is you can just have that on your iPhone, and you can connect your iPhone from Internet Explorer on her PC, drag the file off, and then you can install it. That app still is yet to be approved. I think it's still pending approval on the iTunes store, but that's one I really want to see as well. But for the moment, File Magnet does a really, really good job, and it's very, very slick as well.
Right. All right. Now, Critter Crunch is next. £5.99. Obviously, it's a game, and it involves critters who basically move around it's basically a gem matching game, right?
Yeah, that's right. There's a whole bunch of gem matching games on there, including the ubiquitous and, I have to say, utterly fabulous Bejeweled is still on there. It's a cracking app for the iPhone. Mm-hmm. But Critter Crunch is really sweet. It's very sort of, it looks very sort of Japanese, Korean, the styling of it. And basically, you control a little monster at the bottom of the screen, move them around, and you've got to feed smaller monsters above you to larger monsters. And there's all sorts of rules. You get food chains, there's different coloured ones you've got to try and move around. You get special power-ups like garlic that makes everything move up a level, or watermelon pips that you can shoot things with. Mm-hmm. It's really, really, really fun, and it's a very well put together application.
Cool. All right, now next is Guitar Toolkit. If you own a guitar and an iPhone, which I know probably a lot of people do, you should also own this app, right?
That's right. It does a few different things. It's a chord lookup tool, so if you want to know how to play the G and you don't know how to, then obviously you need some lessons and you should probably not have bought that guitar. But if you don't, you can look it up in this little thing as well. There's a metronome on there that you can set to different time signatures, and you can also tap so that you can play the different strings of the guitar, so you can make sure your guitar's in tune. It's such a nicely put together little app.
Yeah. I mean, my favorite is one that is actually in your 32 best. I want to mention it. It's called Tuner. It's £2.99. And basically, it lists thousands of internet radio broadcasts, and it would be just like listening to radio on your Mac, but you're doing it through your touch or your iPhone. And I've seen it work, and it really is fantastic.
It's a cracking app. The one problem I have with that is that because I presume this is the reason, because the BBC only broadcasts its stations as real media streams, you can't receive those on Tuner, which is really annoying, because I'd like to be able to just listen to Radio 4 when I'm working, or Radio 2, and do that, but you can't do BBC stations. Since you've snuck in one extra one, Brad, I want to sneak in one extra one as well.
All
right. which is an application called Labyrinth, which is there's a free version which has got 10 levels in it, and it's basically just a version of that old sort of pin wooden thing with a metal ball on it with handles that you turn to sort of guide the ball through a maze.
Mm-hmm.
And it uses the iPhone's accelerometer a bit like you would with Super Monkey Ball, but this it's the physics are really, really fantastic. And Mac format, I think, must have lost 3 man hours yesterday as everyone clustered round and the iPhone got passed around the table as everyone tried to get round level 10. But yeah, great little app, and it's free as well.
And do you think that most of these developers are actually pricing their products well? I mean, are you seeing a lot of apps on the App Store that are really too expensive, or are they just about right?
No, I think everybody's getting a bit right. There are a few on there that are slightly more expensive, but they tend to be enterprise-level applications. But most of the time, it's £3, £4, £5.
All right, Chris, thanks for going over some of the favorite apps from your list. 32 others in the great article you've got for people who are really either using an iPod Touch or a phone at this point or considering it. It's really worth watching or looking into. Thanks.
No worries. And one thing I'd like to say as well is that we're instigating a regular spread of iPhone app reviews in the magazine. So immediately after the shareware spread that Craig Granell writes in the magazine, going forward, you'll see a spread of iPhone apps in there as well. So I'm already working on the next batch.
Fantastic, fantastic. Chris, thanks so much for joining us.
No worries, always a pleasure, Brad.
Chris Finn is deputy editor of Mac Format Magazine. His 6-page review of the 32 best iPhone apps begins on page 68 in the September issue. Every episode of Mac Format this week, we answer questions from listeners, and Trevor Middleton is the guy who answers them. He joins us now. Hello, Trevor.
Hello, Brad. How are you today?
Very good. Thanks for asking. Let's get right into the questions. Oh, but first, one thing. You can send questions to Trevor at machelpme@futurenet.co.uk. And don't forget to tell us where you're from and how to pronounce your name. And our first question comes to us from Darren Wells in Newbury, Great Britain. He wrote us, "The Finder on my G4 doesn't see my 20-inch iMac. The G4 is talking to the network wirelessly via a Buffalo Bridge to a D-Link router. Do you think that's the problem, or is there something lurking in system preferences that I've missed that's stopping the G4 talking to the network?" Trevor.
Okay, well, Darren, sometimes having two devices, a router and a bridge, can be a problem. They could be working as entirely separate devices, so check that they're working together properly. Check that they're not both set up, for instance, as DHCP servers allocating IP addresses in different ranges. If that happens, then essentially you have two different networks, the iMac and the G4. So when you've checked that, look in network system preferences, check the IP address of each Mac, and check that they're both in the same range. And when you've done that, use the Go menu to choose Connect to Server and type in the iMac's IP address manually. Very often, browsing the network in the Finder doesn't work as it should. So give that a try. Brad.
All right. Question two comes to us from Jim Ormiston in Cumbernauld, Scotland. He wrote us, "I've started to experience a reluctance to shut down with my MacBook. When I select shut down, the screensaver fails to show the spinning wheel, and after a few seconds, a message says logout has timed out due to the Finder not closing down. I end up having to force the shutdown by holding the power button down. I know this is not a recommended way of shutting down, but force quit and sleep mode doesn't work either, except for closing the lid. I wonder if a clean install or archive and install would fix this, or is this a problem requiring a trip to the Genius Bar at Apple?" Trevor.
Okay, well, a couple of suggestions, Jim. From what you say, it sounds as though there is corruption in the Finder. So first of all, try trashing the Finder's plist file. Now, you'll find that in the Preferences folder, which in turn is within the Library folder inside your home folder. And it's called com.apple.finder.plist. Just drag it to the trash, and the next time the Finder launches, you will find that you have a nice fresh plist file. Now, that should get rid of any corrupt Finder preferences. Next, try quitting a process called Login Window. And you can do this by opening Activity Monitor, which is in the Utilities folder on your Mac. Click at the top of the process name column to sort by that item, then choose Login Window and click Quit Process. Now that will log you out, but the next time you shut down, I'm pretty sure you won't have that nasty problem. Brad.
All right, our final question comes to us from Lee Hoxson of Kingsland in Norfolk. I have a problem with the file's permission on my iMac, he writes. Before I had Leopard, I backed up by copying the files in the home directory to an external hard disk. When I upgraded to Leopard, I decided to do a new install and clean out all the information on the hard disk. I then set up a new account and copied the files from the external hard into the home folder. From then on, I have been only able to read the files straight away. If I want to edit the file, I need to go into the file information and set the read and write option under sharing and permissions. This works for about a week before I need to go back and change it again. What can I do to fix this? Trevor.
Okay, well, Lee, I'd love to get a bit more detail from you on this one, Lee, but it does sound as though you gave the main administrator account a different name when you reinstalled the system on your iMac. That can often be the cause of this type of problem. So, try putting all the affected files into a folder, then click on the folder, go to the File menu, and select Get Info. Then, in the Sharing and Permissions section, you can add a new user with the correct name and set up permissions for that user. And then you can apply the permissions for the folder to all the files within the folder. Give that a try, and by all means, get back to me if you're still having the same problem. Brad.
All right, Trevor, three great questions and three great answers again this time. Thanks so much for helping us. We'll see you down the road.
Okay, no problem. Cheers now.
You can email us with your questions to machelpme@futurenet.co.uk, and don't forget to tell us where you're from and how to pronounce your name. And that's it for another edition of Mac for Math this week. My thanks to Chris Finn and Trevor Middleton. Our associate producer is Misha Sakalaropoulou. Join us for our next edition on Monday, the 1st of September. Until then, I'm Brad Gibson. Thanks for joining us.